This is a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.
Right, hello. Thanks for being there. No messing, let's get straight to it. Welcome to the Fun Kids Science Weekly. My name's Dan, hello. And if you love your amazing, your weird and your wonderful and your probably dangerous stuff from the universe, this is the place you need to stay. It's where we whisk around the whole galaxy and see what's going on. This week we're looking at one insect's ingenious method of keeping themselves disguised from predators. Also, we'll find out why one of the most important scientific instruments in history is broken, and we'll learn why the world might be completely destroyed in about 10 years' time. I promise, though, it's a fun listen. We start with one of our favourite geniuses from Fun Kids. This is Professor Hallux.
Professor Hallux's digital dental depository, with support from Philips Sonicare.
To honour great Uncle Halitosis, dentist extraordinaire, on the occasion of his 100th birthday, Professor Hallux is creating a pop-up digital dental depository, an oral health help desk. He's going to see how many questions all about teeth he can answer against the clock.
Give us a hand, will you, Nanobot? The turbine needs winding. Here you go. You can ask the questions. Today, they're all about the bugs in our mouths.
Bugs in our mouths? What on earth do you mean by bugs?
What I mean by bugs is microorganisms such as bacteria, tiny living things which make a home in all sorts of places on Earth, and that includes mouths. Bacteria collect everywhere in the mouth, and not just on the teeth and gums. They often cover parts of the cheeks and the back of the throat. They can also live in between all the bumps and ridges found on the tongue.
Not keen on that. So, bacteria, horrible germs which make us sick. True or false?
False! Most bacteria are harmless, and many are even helpful to us. Only a small proportion of bacteria make us poorly. There are typically over 70 different types of bacteria in the mouth. Most of them occur naturally, doing you no harm at all. There are, however, some bacteria that can damage our teeth and gums and cause problems like bad breath.
You're doing great! Next up, how do these bugs cause damage?
It's all because of plaque. A plaque attack! If you don't brush your teeth, millions of bacteria can collect in a sticky substance called plaque. That's the yellow coating you sometimes see on your teeth. If you run your tongue around your teeth before you brush your teeth, you might be able to feel it. Some bacteria love to digest the sugar in our mouth. As they eat, they increase in number and produce acids that break down the surface of your teeth. If not removed, plaque can completely destroy the outside of the tooth and expose the nerves inside, and that's toothache. The more plaque you have, the more of these harmful substances are in contact with your teeth and gums.
Oh, better hurry. What's the best way to see off plaque attack and keep the harmful bugs at bay?
Proper brushing, flossing, and using antibacterial mouthwashes can reduce the number of bacteria that build up in specific areas between the teeth and along the gum line. They'll reduce the plaque and help keep your teeth and gums safe and strong.
And finally, for a bonus point, what about tongue brush?
Well, as we've seen, bacteria are all over our mouths. And there's no point just focusing on getting rid of those on our teeth and gums. Using a tongue brush helps remove those lurking in the ridges on your tongue.
That's correct. And time's up. Brilliant, Professor. Very respectable score there. And lots of data for our digital dental depository.
Alex's Digital Dental Depository, with support from Philips Sonicare. Find out more at funkidslive.com/Hallux.
I want to say a quick hello to Sydney Royal B, who has got in touch since the last episode. Remember, if you want a shout out on the show, the way that you need to say hello to me is through the iTunes podcast store. It's the best place as well if you want a science question answered by a proper expert genius on the show. Open up the iTunes podcast store, find the Fun Kids Science Weekly. You can give us some stars as well. 5 would be amazing. Also, there's a place where you can leave your name, which is really great, so I know who you are. And there's a little box at the bottom. In that box, you can say whatever you want. You can say hello. You can let me know what you think of the show. You can also ask me like a proper sciencey question that's niggling around your brain, and I'll see it and I'll try and get an expert to come on the show to answer it for you. That's what you need to do. Find the Fun Kids Science Weekly on the iTunes podcast store and leave us a review. It's time for this week's Dangerous Dan, where we have a look at the most mean and evil things in the universe. Today, we're talking about the assassin bug. And if you think that lives can be determined by what name you've got, I mean, the assassin bug is never going to have a good ride, is it? It's found in East Africa and parts of Asia. Let's start with the stats, shall we? It measures around a centimetre long, it's got six legs, and it eats ants and beetles and flies. But how it kills them, I mean, it's absolutely terrifying. It's so devastatingly cruel. It pierces its prey with its pincers, then it injects paralysis-inducing saliva so the other insects can't move, and then an enzyme comes out of it and it dissolves inside the prey, and then the bug sucks out all the insides, which is gross. But here's when things start getting even stranger. After sucking out the insides of its prey, the assassin bug will leave the exoskeleton, so that's the shell and the body of the poor ants that it's eaten, and then it will curl it all up into a ball, and then it will stick it on its back. So if you, and it puts loads of these ant skeletons onto itself, so it's covered in them, and it disguises them, and it tries to confuse another predator, because then bigger animals, they'll come along, and they won't see, like, a delicious assassin bug that might make for a nice, tasty snack. Instead, they'll just see a bunch of dead ants hovering through the air. It's the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Now remember, if you've got any science question racking around your brain that you want answered by a proper expert, let me know. Leave it as a review over on the iTunes podcast store, and I'll get a genius in that particular field to answer it for you. Now, this question comes from Aishan, who asks, why do bulls get angry when they see red? Now, we've got Professor Martin Stevens on the phone. Hey, Martin.
Hello.
So very quickly, before you let us know, can you just explain why you are the best person for the job of answering this?
Well, I'm not sure I'm absolutely the best, but hopefully I'm good enough. Well, basically, I study animal vision, and I study how animals use their vision in behaviour and how they interact with the world around them, both in the natural world, but also in sort of human settings as well.
Brilliant. So we get loads of questions sent in from listeners from all over the world. This is from Aishan. They want to know why bulls get angry when they see the colour red. Take it away.
Well, it's a really good question. And one of the funny things about that is that bulls probably can't actually see red. They are what's known as a dichromat. And that basically really means they just see two broad types of colour. So they see colours that to us would be kind of like blues and yellows, but they can't actually tell the difference between things like reds and greens. And the only thing they're likely to see there is actually how bright or dark the red is and the movement that might be involved.
So are they seeing things in monochrome?
Not necessarily monochrome, no. It's a bit more like if you imagine some people are colour blind and they can't tell the difference between red and green, but they still see other colours around them. They might see blues or they might see yellows, but they don't necessarily, or they're not able to tell the difference between some of the colours that a person with normal colour vision would, like, as I say, red or green.
So I have that type of colour blindness, so I really struggle with reds and greens and then blues and purples together. So it's a bit like that, is it?
Yeah, it's not different at all, really, from that. I mean, there are subtle differences, but basically the bull can't really see very well that far into the spectrum. That's those sort of wavelengths of light are just beyond its capabilities of seeing, and it lacks the type of receptors in its eye, the type of cells in its eye that other animals, like most humans, would use to tell the difference between sort of greens and reds and so on. So, you know, when a bull might get angry at a moving red cape or something like that, it's probably more just the actual movement itself and how bright the object is, rather than being able to see red or being overly angry because of red.
So why have bullfighters, why are they so insistent on flashing red to it? Is it just what they're brought up to believe?
Well, I'm definitely not an expert on bullfighting, but I suppose, yeah, I suppose it's probably tradition. It's probably what has been involved with, you know, with that pursuit for a long time. And sometimes people aren't very, you know, quick to change things. And I suppose it does potentially, you know, still work depending on your perspective on things. It's, you know, the bull might still charge at that because it's moving and it's, you know, in a situation that might cause it to show that behaviour.
So a bull is an example of a creature whose eyesight is much worse than ours. What if you study animals' eyes? Are there any examples of creatures who can see much more on the spectrum that we can, who can see colours that we could only dream of?
Oh, yeah, there are lots. I mean, we have a pretty decent sense of colour vision, but it's absolutely by no means the best that you get in nature. If you take an animal, a type of animal that's very common that we see a lot of and that's very common, things like birds. You know, they actually see the world in a far greater range of colours than us. They can see ultraviolet light, which we can't see. Our visual system cuts it out.
So how does that work? How can they see ultraviolet light? I mean, not the specific science of it, but how would that seem in their vision? Would it, you know, in some sci-fi movies when you've got like waves of these things that appear, is it kind of like that?
It's hard. Well, I mean, you never really, of course, can get inside the mind of another animal and know exactly what they're seeing and how they perceive things. But probably it's a bit more like the equivalent of the way that we would, you know, see blue on a TV screen or something like that. It's like an extra colour that's available to them. And when they're looking around the world, there's lots of things that might be ultraviolet, and so they're seeing colours that are a mixture of not just blues and reds and greens, but also ultraviolet as well. And, you know, they're not the only ones. Lots and lots of animals see ultraviolet light. Bees can see ultraviolet light, and you get markings on flowers that are specifically to direct bees to the centre of the flower. They're like little landing lights telling it where to go.
And back to colours very quickly. Are they seeing colours in things that we would just see as one blanket shade? For instance, I'm staring right now at a bright blue wall. If a bird looked at that same blue wall, would it see a whole tapestry of different tones?
It really depends. I mean, so generally speaking, if you've got, you know, a wall which is completely uniform, it's probably going to be uniform to them as well. It just might be that they see it as a different colour, but it's still a uniform colour. But then you can get hidden colours in the natural world that we can't see. And as I said, flowers are a good example, because a lot of flowers that might look completely uniform colour to us have these sort of hidden markings that you can only really see under ultraviolet light. And there are some animals in nature which have those kind of similar hidden patterns. Some fish, for example, have little face patterns that are visible under ultraviolet light that we can't see, but they can.
And away from colours, lastly, are there any other fantastic examples of how an eye has evolved to see things that we can't see as humans, that or deal with predators, perhaps?
Yeah, I mean, there's lots and lots. I mean, the one thing to think about eyes is that they're very, very diverse, and the way that they work is usually very tightly tuned to the kind of biology of the animal and where it lives and the kind of things it has to do. I mean, a nice example that isn't related to colour are things like the eyes of birds of prey, like eagles, that are very, very good at having high acuity. They can pick out small patterns and details from a very, very long distance away. You know, they can see things that we would not be able to resolve at all.
Fantastic. Professor Martin, well, the answer to the question there, Aishan, is why do bulls get angry when they see red? Nothing to do with the colour, probably because they're really irritated at the person that's waving a flag in front of their face. Professor Martin Stevens from the University of Exeter, thank you so much for coming on the Fun Kids Science Weekly.
All right, thank you.
Now, next week on the Fun Kids Science Weekly, we're chatting to Barry Fitzgerald. He's the author of Secrets of Superhero Science, which tries to figure out whether all the superheroes that you see in films and stuff, whether they can ever be made real by science. So whether we can actually become invisible ever, whether we can become super strong, whether we will ever travel through time. And also, Barry, he is a judge of this year's Young Imagineers competition, which Equinor and the Science Museum do every single year. And there's still a little bit of time for you to enter that. They want you to make the world a better place, for you to come up with an invention, an idea that could change the future. Now, entries close, I think, on the 21st of October. So be quick about this. If you've got an idea which you think could really help the world live in the next few years, have a search online for that. It's called the Young Imagineers Competition. And next week, we'll speak to one of the judges, Barry Fitzgerald, on the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Right, it's time for Bex from the club and me to travel all around the country and have a look at Britain's digital railways.
Britain's digital railway. Whether it's passengers on a fast intercity service, a branch line to the coast, or commuters travelling to work on a tram or tube, Britain's railways are certainly busy. Bex and Dan are joining the passengers and learning that the number of people using the railways is expected to grow, and that things are going to have to change.
Hey Dan, how long till our train gets here?
Another 10 minutes? Why don't you find us something to watch online whilst we're waiting?
Oh, this looks cool. This video is called The Digital Railway. Let's check it out.
Today, Britain's railway network carries over 3 million people every day. That's 1.3 billion journeys each year. And with the population set to increase, within 20 years, there will be double the amount of rail passengers.
Oh my goodness! Where will all these passengers go? Maybe we'll all be like squashed in, like sardines maybe. Or maybe they might make double-decker trains? One of those? Oh, I think I've got it though. Maybe we'll have to hang on to the train roof, you know, a bit like ninjas in an action movie.
Yeah, chill out, Dan. Although actually, you know, it might be quite cool to hang out on the roof like a ninja.
That's certainly cool.
I mean, I'm sure they'll just make more trains and just shove them on the track. Then Bob's your uncle, room for everyone.
Won't that cause a load of train traffic jams though? And affect the environment?
Yeah, I suppose. You might need to come up with a way to make the railways super safe and super clean with all the extra trains.
What if each train could carry more people? You could perhaps get rid of the seats and just make everyone stand up?
Yeah, come on, you moan more than anybody if you can't get a seat.
Fair point. I do like a seat, I can't lie. Maybe trains could just go faster. You know, fill them with rocket fuel and let them go at like 300 miles an hour. That way they can make journeys faster and take all the extra passengers.
Yeah, but to go really fast, you want the track to be as straight and as flat as possible, right? I mean, too many curves and hills, you might have to slow down. Just think, if you go too fast on a bumpy track, you might actually end up in orbit.
Gosh, it's tough, isn't it?
Or maybe they'll just build, like, a million more miles of super track. That way there could be room for tons of new trains.
Just imagine, though, when you look out of the window, all you'd see was track and trains. Cool, if you like trains.
Yeah, I mean, not everyone is gonna want trains zooming past their house, and building a load of new tracks is gonna be expensive, right? So that doesn't really sound like a solution either.
I suppose that means they're gonna have to work with the track that already exists.
Dan and Bex are right. The railway network has to work with what it's got. Luckily, like with many other parts of life, technology has advanced to help. With careful planning, the capacity on the network can be increased. That means more trains carrying more passengers. It's a challenge that engineers are excited about, and one they're calling the digital railway. It might sound a bit like a computer game, but it just means using the very latest tech developments to get more trains on the network, travelling more efficiently and safely.
Right on time. Come on, hurry up.
Let me guess. You want to bag a seat.
Britain's Digital Railway. With support from the Royal Academy of Engineering. Find out more at funkidslive.com/railway.
Right, it's time to talk about the science that has been in the news this week. Scientists have issued the most extensive warning yet on the risk of global warming. They've said that the planet is getting too hot too quickly, and that if we don't act fast, we will irreparably damage the Earth. Ice caps will melt, which will rise the ocean levels, which will change the way the world and all the nature inside it works. Also, the Hubble Space Telescope has lost one of the gyroscopes needed to point the craft. The observatory, it's one of the most important scientific instruments ever. It was placed in safe mode over the weekend while scientists tried to fix the problem. The malfunctioning Hubble, it only has two functioning gyros. but it needs three to be able to work properly. And finally, the 2018 Nobel Prize in Chemistry, it's been awarded to three scientists for their discoveries in enzyme research. They used a technique called direct evolution to create three new proteins, and the enzymes, they speed up chemical reactions in your body. And these discoveries can make us make new, can help us make new enzymes, and they've got themselves a nice shiny Nobel Prize for it. That is it for this week's episode of the Fun Kids Science Weekly. We'll be back next time chatting to Barry Fitzgerald all about the Young Imagineers competition, where you can help change the future of the world. Give that a search online if you want to enter between now and next week. There's still time for you to get involved. Also, if you've got a question that you want to ask a proper science expert, the best place to do that is as a review on the iTunes podcast store. While you're there, you can find all our amazing Fun Kids Science series. You can download them for free as well on the Fun Kids app and have a listen at funkidslive.com. And Fun Kids, it's a kids radio station that you can hear all over the UK on your DAB digital radio, on that free Fun Kids app, and over at funkidslive.com.
So that was a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.